I feel like the Azure synchronization protocol is going to be beneficial for the farm, even though if you get consumption rates below 50%.
Yeah.
And that's because a cow will be more likely, even if she doesn't become pregnant to the protocol, she's going to become more likely to become pregnant to the cleanup bull if she's exposed to the protocol than she would have been had she never been exposed to it to begin with. And that's because Azure synchronization protocols are very effective at inducing cyclicity. So a lot of those animals are going to be experiencing what we call postpartum menstruation, right? Which is a period at which cows fail to ovulate. If they don't ovulate, there's no chance they're going to get pregnant by the bull. So even though you might get some ugly numbers, right? Some ugly results from time to eye, those results might still be very beneficial to the farm in the end.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. bioMérieux is a world leader in the field of diagnostics for more than 60 years. From pathogen detection to genomics and data applications, bioMérieux helps beef industrials going beyond the test results to help control your food safety and process risks. Virbac, committed to growth. For information, visit vet-us.verbac.com/cattle or see your Virbac representative. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts. Contact us for time and labor-saving solutions. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Molinix, and today I have Dr. Nicholas Diaz, or Diaz, as you would say it in the United States, from Kansas State University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So for our audience, kind of give your background. Now, you know you're assistant professor at K-State, focusing in reproductive technologies and fertility, but kind of give you your background of, you know, where you come from and how you got to K-State.
Absolutely. I was born and raised in Brazil, in a city called São Paulo. It's the largest city in the Southern Hemisphere. It's about 12 million people there. So I don't come from a farming background whatsoever. But I did end up going to vet school down there, graduated in veterinary medicine from the São Paulo State University, or the State University of São Paulo, in 2016. And my university vet school was a five-year course, and the very last year was all about internships. So pretty much the first 4 years you spend, you know, taking classes and learning material. But the fifth year you go out and, you know, spend some time doing whatever it is that you want to do for your career. So for that year I spent about 4 months, give or take, in a company down in Brazil that does breeding seasons for operations. So I was traveling all over Brazil, working 600 animals in the chute every day kind of deal. And for the remaining of that period, I was able to come to Virginia Tech to do about 6 months of internship over there. And after my time as an intern in Virginia Tech, I was invited by my advisor to come back and do a master's program with him. So I ended up doing my master's and PhD over at Virginia Tech under the supervision of Dr. Vitor Mercadante. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I graduated from there, I was fortunate to join Kansas State University. Started in January of 2023 here in the Animal Sciences and Industry Department. And yeah, I've been here ever since.
That's awesome. So a lot of your research is focused around fertility and trying to improve, you know, conception rates to AI, et cetera, correct?
Correct, yeah. My research is mainly focused on fertility of Azure synchronization protocols, but I don't necessarily study, you know, what about if we give this injection 6 hours later or 6 hours before, what would happen to the follicular wave and so on. Not that I don't think that kind of research is not important, it's just not the main focus of my research. One thing that I learned, you know, by spending time over there in Brazil and here in the US is to understand how different the two production systems are.
Yeah.
In Brazil, if you have a farm that you have 1,000 animals, you have a small farm. Yeah. Here in the United States, it's quite the opposite. I feel like the average producer, cow-calf producer here in the United States is usually someone who farms as a hobby or perhaps a way to get tax deductions. So average number of cows per farm is around between 40 to 60 animals. It's not their primary source of income. Oftentimes the producer don't even know if the operation is profitable or not. So when we talk about, you know, trying to convince those producers to adopt ester synchronization protocols, you're trying to convince them to spend some time and money to do an investment where the return is going to be, what, 9 months later, the cows are going to calve, and then about 7 months later, they're going to wean. So the return on investment is far down the street. And, you know, oftentimes the guy is producer is a lawyer or something, and they can get to make that money just by getting a new case in their farm or anything. So it's kind of hard to convince those folks to adopt those ester synchronization protocols, despite all of the advantages they bring.
Yeah, and that's a challenge, is adoption rate. And so many cool technology out there that really benefits cow-calf producers, that adoption rates are way too low.
For sure.
So in terms of your research, what are you looking at to help increase fertility or increase in conception rates?
Yeah, so during my time at Virginia Tech, my advisor had a 70% research, 30% extension appointment. So I was fortunate to spend some time and engage a little bit in extension and I get involved with producers over there. Mm-hmm. And we did we surveyed the producers trying to understand what are the reasons they fail to adopt ester synchronization protocols. And, you know, the usual response you get is that conception rates are too low, or there are too many handling events and things like that. But one of the responses that we got, for example, was the impression that they had that the seeder device that we use to synchronize cows would induce vaginitis, mm-hmm. and that the degree of the vaginitis the seeder would induce would affect fertility. We did an experiment over there. We worked closely with the Virginia Department of Corrections, which is just a fancy way of saying prison. We are fortunate to have them as partners. Actually, they are the largest client for the production management of the vet school over there. So then, you know, the vet students can get to go to the farm and learn hands-on how things work in the farm and everything. But they breed about 12 to 1500 animals a year, which when your variable of interest is fertility, is very fortunate to have access to those animals. So we in the animal science department would do a lot of research with those herds. And so we did essentially just enrolled 1,200 animals in ester synchronization protocols and assessed the intensity and degree of vaginitis induced by the seeder, mm-hmm. by assigning a score to the seeder the day we removed the seeder. So if the seeder came out with no secretions whatsoever, it was a score 1. Secretions were clear, we gave them a score 2. If there were purulent secretions on the seeder, we saw a score 3. And if on top of purulent secretions, we also had blood, we assign a score 4. We didn't see any statistical differences for conception rates, mainly because the incidence of seeder scores 1 and 4 were very low. So then you don't have a lot of statistical power in those groups.
Right.
But we see a stair step trend as the degree of vaginitis increases, the conception rates to the protocol decreases as well. So that not only emphasizes the importance of being clean when handling seeders, right? But one thing that I'm trying to do right now is to try to come up with strategies to try to mitigate the vaginitis induced by the seeder to ester synchronization protocols. For example, one of the efforts that we're trying to do right now, and we're still in the preliminary stage of this, but perhaps using the day that you take the seeder off, trying to flush the vagina of those animals and remove the content, kind of try to wash the vagina of those cows in a way that would be quick and easily adoptable by producers. to see if we can decrease the abundance of inflammatory cells in the vagina that could potentially be contributing to that decreased conception rates.
So what is the percentage of cows that would be a score four?
Score four was about, I don't remember by heart exactly the distribution, but it was about 8%. And the majority of scores fours that we saw were in heifers, which for me makes sense, right? You have the same size of a cedar, but you have a smaller vagina. So then the, the physical impact that the cedar makes against the vaginal wall is greater, and that induces a greater degree of inflammation.
So what was the, I know it wasn't significantly different, but what was the slight decrease in conception rate getting those fours?
Yeah, so the cedar, I'm not going to remember exactly the percentage in my head, but I think that cedar scores one had about 60% of conception rates to the protocol. Scores two, about 58. When you get it with three, we're talking about low 50s. And the score four was about 45%. So you really do see a decrease as the intensity of vaginitis increases. At the day of insemination, we also assigned a score, similar score, with the same idea behind it, to both the AI sheath, but also down there in Virginia, we would breed animals with that protective plastic sheath that goes on top of the regular AI sheath so that you bypass any kind of contaminants from the vagina.
Right.
So at the day of AI, we also assigned a score to both of those sheaths with the idea that the AI sheath would give you an assessment of how the uterine environment was at the day of AI, and the protective plastic sheath would give you an assessment of how the vagina was at the day of AI. And we see the same trend as the degree of vaginitis increases, the conception rates decrease as well.
So are there any other options? I know maybe decreased cedar size for heifers. Is there anything else out there that, you know, you talk about maybe kind of doing a pre-wash?
That's one of the ideas. There is some conversations here between me and a coworker of mine, a colleague of mine here in the department, Dr. Victor Gomez, who works in the dairy side of reproduction, on trying to explore using ewe cedars instead of cow cedars next year to do a preliminary trial just to see, you know, would we achieve the needed progesterone concentrations and would we still be able to control the estrous cycle that way. And I think that could potentially be an alternative, but I'm also concerned that you would increase the rate of lost cedars by decreasing the size as well. It's one way to approach this, but I'm not. But we will only know when we really test it.
I think there's a lot of benefits of when you get those lower than 50% preg rates with AI. It's a really big turnoff of why am I doing this? Why am I taking the time? You know, you touched on labor of the added days to run cows to the chute. And if you're getting less than 50%, that's a huge expense that ranch is occurring that really is a turnoff to why am I AIing cows if I'm not in the high 60%.
Right. And I understand that kind of concern, Travis, but if I'm being honest, I feel like the estrous synchronization protocol is going to be beneficial for the farm, even though if you get conception rates below 50%.
Yeah.
And that's because a cow will be more likely, even if she doesn't become pregnant to the protocol, she's going to become more likely to become pregnant to the cleanup bull if she's exposed to the protocol than she would have been had she never been exposed to it to begin with. And that's because estrous synchronization protocols are very effective at inducing cyclicity. So a lot of those animals are going to be experiencing what we call postpartum menestrous, right? Which is a period at which cows fail to ovulate. If they don't ovulate, there's no chance they're going to get pregnant by the bull. So even though you might get some ugly numbers, right? Some ugly results from timed AI, those results might still be very beneficial to the farm in the end, right? You can not only increase the amount of cows becoming pregnant earlier from those that do become pregnant to time they eye, but by inducing cyclicity of those animals that are experiencing postpartum menestrous, you help them to become pregnant earlier by the bull as well.
Right.
That results in more cows calving earlier. You get Older calves are weaning. Older calves are weaning are usually heavier, and that's money in the pocket of the producer, right?
That's a great point. You know, estrus synchronization in natural service is a great tool that's more underutilized than just synchronization and AI that could really help, especially in some late calving herds of jumping ahead a lot of cows that calved a little bit later, et cetera. What other research are you looking at to help with fertility? I know you talked about some excitability and behavior, looking at some behavior responses of how cows responded to estrus synchronization.
Absolutely. So I mentioned about our, you know, experiments trying to intervene and mitigate the vaginitis from the cedar. That's kind of trying to deal with the consequence that the protocol brings, kind of deal. But I'm also interested in trying to explore what is the profile of animals that we enroll in the estrus synchronization protocol that perform better, so that we can try to come up with cheap, easily adoptable strategies to improve the profile of animals before we expose them to the estrus synchronization protocol, and then hopefully get better results, right? So one of the studies we did, over there at Virginia Tech during my grad school, was to try to explore the temperament of heifers that are enrolled in estrus synchronization protocols and try to see if that would influence fertility to the protocol. So essentially, we evaluated temperament of heifers at the day of cedar in, and we did that by assigning what we call a shoot score, which is essentially just assessing the behavior of the heifer while she's caught and restrained in the shoot. If she's calm, not vocalizing, you would assign her a score of 1. If you got to run away from the chute, otherwise she's going to kill you, she's a score of 5 kind of deal.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then we also had these infrared sensors commonly used in rodeos, those eyes timers kind of deal, that you place a pair right in front of the chute, and then you place a pair about 2 meters away. So then whenever you let the heifer go, you release the heifer from the chute and she walks in front of the first pair, that triggers the clock. Whenever she walks in front of the second pair, it stops the clock. So then by knowing the time it took for her to run those 2 meters, you can calculate what we call an exit velocity. And we see a lot of correlations of, you know, if the heifer runs away from the chute, she's likely more excitable than one that just calmly walks away from it. So we use those two parameters, right? The chute scoring, the exit velocity, to classify the heifer as either adequate temperament or excitable temperament. And we see that heifers with excitable temperament had decreased conception rates to the protocol when we compared to the ones that had adequate temperament. What was more interesting for me, though, was that we collected blood samples in one of those, in one of the farms, to measure cortisol, which is often the stress hormone, I guess, as folks usually refer to. And we see that excitable heifers have more cortisol in the blood than adequate heifers do in all three handling events of the protocol. But what was more interesting is that concentrations of cortisol were greater at cedar in when compared to cedar out, which in turn were greater than the day of time they eye. So as you handle the heifers, they kind of become acclimated to being handled. And then when we look at cortisol concentrations of excitable heifers only, okay, at the day of time they eye. So we're talking about the day we're inseminating those heifers. We collect the blood, right? We're looking at cortisol concentrations. The excitable heifers that do become pregnant, they have lesser cortisol in the blood when compared to the excitable heifers that do not become pregnant, right? Whenever I started evaluating that data, it kind of made sense to me that if we were to handle heifers more often prior to beginning the protocol, right, can we further decrease cortisol concentrations by the day of time they eye, and then therefore improve fertility? The issue with that, though, is that, you know, handling events, or the amount of handling events, is one of the main reasons producers fail to adopt estrus synchronization to begin with, right?
Yep, right.
So one thing that we're trying to explore now, and this is a trial that we started last year and we're finalizing it now, is trying to enroll these heifers in an acclimation protocol not prior to the Astro Synchronization Protocol, but at the same handling events that the Astro Synchronization Protocol requires. So essentially what we did is before we started the Astro Synchronization Protocols, we evaluated those heifers for what we call repro track score, which is just a way to try to determine their sexual maturity, determine which heifers have reached puberty or which heifers are closer to reaching puberty. And we evaluated them for shoot score as well. And based on those two parameters, we assigned them to the treatment, right? So they were either control or heifers to be acclimated. What we ended up doing is that we tagged them with different tag colors, depending on what group they were. So let's say red tag color was treatment, the blue tag color was control. And then all of these heifers went to the pasture together, right? They were all in the same pasture. Whenever we bring them to do the Astro Synchronization Protocols, we would sort red from blues. So then our reds, which are treatment, right, the ones that are enrolled in acclimation, we will run them through the handling facility. So they'll go through the alley, they'll go through the chute, but they will not be caught, right? We just expose them to your facilities. And then after we did that, we just commingle them back with blues. And then we bring everybody in to do the handling event of the Astro Synchronization Protocol. So we did that at Cedar Inn, we did that at Cedar Owl, and we did that at the Day of Time AI. So then by the end, our acclimated heifers have had 6 trips to the chute, whereas our control heifers have had only three trips to the chute, right? We are seeing that some of the parameters related to temperament are being decreased by the Day of Time AI in our acclimated heifers when compared to controls. And we're actually seeing about a 9% improvement in conception rates by adopting this strategy. We also collected blood in the subset of those animals to analyze cortisol. Unfortunately, that hasn't been evaluated yet. I think we're going to analyze cortisol samples starting in January now. But it's promising results, right? It's an easy way for you to try to improve your conception rates. We ended up timing how long it took for us to run heifers through the handling facilities. And, you know, granted, that's gonna depend on how many people you have working on the chute and what kind of facilities we're talking about and all that. But the longest it took us to run about 60-some heifers was about 12 minutes. What took us the longest was to sort blues from reds, right? But if a producer is adopting this in their operation, they're not going to sort anyone, right? They're just going to run everybody through the handling facilities and see the benefits of that. So if you're willing to work an extra, I don't know, half an hour, 50 minutes to improve about 9% of conception rates, that seems to be a good deal to me. Just important to emphasize that you want to do this as calm as you can, right? You want to make that acclimation event to be an acclimation event and not a extra stressing event for those heifers, right?
Right. And sometimes we see that, especially on the research side, it's more we run animals through a chute, the more not nasty they get, but more they get less willing to be ran through the chute because we do so much to them from a research standpoint. But if you do it in a very slow, calm manner and not catching them, not doing anything to them, and they do this in other countries, Australia, et cetera, it's acclimating to working facilities. It's just run them through the chute and not catch them. And it's just a flow of animals, right?
Yeah.
And some of that may be partially dictated the quality of working facilities that you have as well, because there could be some confoundedness in – you know, how well they flow through the chute if you got some really old non-flowing type of facility, right?
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. And that's something you see. I mean, they're just better facilities than others, right? But I think that what was nice about this experiment is that the majority of the animals we bred were in a commercial setting. So we had I think we bred in about 8 different locations between last year and this year.
Yeah.
And you have a variety of different facilities, but we see consistent results regardless of facility. So in every single place that we bred, we see that the treatment or acclimated heifers perform better than our control heifers did, apart from one of the facilities where they both tied, right? They had the same conception rates exactly.
Yeah.
So definitely is something that plays a role, but we're seeing our strategy being beneficial regardless of what kind of facilities we're talking about.
And you, I guess you could add, you know, you said you're taking 12 minutes for 60 head. And so you can always add that to the your reproductive planner of, to, especially if you're doing multiple groups in one day. But it's, that's not that much more time for a ranch to run through 60 to 100 head and run them through again to AI, pull seeders, whatever it is. So it's not like you're adding a lot of time to get them acclimated.
Exactly.
Or it's not like you're bringing them in, you know, prior to several times. It's the day of the working event.
Exactly. So you're not increasing the number of handling events. You're just making your handling event a little bit longer. Kind of deal. One thing that we're considering doing next year, and it kind of goes hand in hand of what you talked about. You know, we bring those animals very often to the shoot. Oftentimes they get more excitable instead of being more calm because we're doing so much with them. They associate going to the shoot with being, you know, stabbed by a needle and that kind of thing, right? So one thing that we're considering doing next year is to try to do some kind of a positive reinforcement, if you will, to those heifers.
Yeah.
So I either have a figure out a way where we can put a brush kind of deal where it in the alleyway. So while heifers are in the alley, they can kind of like scratch themselves and they can understand that that handling event is not necessarily something bad.
Right.
Or even perhaps, you know, after we run the heifers through the chute, we have two different pans where they go to, and one of those pans are going to have brushes where they can scratch themselves or maybe something palatable that they can eat, to try to relate that experience to not being bad, but being something that can get to be pleasant, right? So then we're improving in that way. But then again, I don't have data. This is just an idea. Still trying to figure out the details on how and how to do this next year, but it's something in our mind here for sure.
It's definitely the next step of going from, you know, traditional way handling animals to low animal stress handling to giving some kind of a positive reward post handling. And so it's just another step that could be added to help increase those results.
Exactly. And just one thing to keep in mind, just I guess as a suggestion to our audience and producers listening to us here, I say that this is not animal science, but probably animal science practice, right? Because I don't have the data to share, but based on the experiments that I've done and what I've seen out there, one thing that might be beneficial is whenever you're handling cows, you know, the cow-calf pair, right? You bring them to the handling facilities, you sort cows from calves so that you can run cows through the chute, right? Instead of, you know, whenever you get done with whatever you're doing with the cows that day, instead of just putting the cow-calf pair back in the pasture, run the calves through the chute as well, right? Mm. Get them acquainted to those handling facilities, because we do see, or this is by experience, again, not, I don't have data to talk about this, but we do see that helps and improves the temperament of those animals, so that whenever those heifers become replacement heifers, they're likely going to have a better temperament as well, right? So easy strategies, creative strategies to be adopted that can go a long ways.
It's time for our famous three.
Your cattle are constantly threatened by the exposure of mycotoxins in feed. Now you can know if mycotoxins are present in your feed and what you should do about it. DSM Firmenich offers a range of analytical services to assess the mycotoxin contamination and solutions to combat mycotoxins. Don't let mycotoxins contaminate your performance. Visit dsmfirmenich.com/mycotoxin-survey to learn more. That's dsm-firmenich.com/mycotoxin-survey.
No, that's great. That's great. So we got three optional questions to wrap us up here. And the first one will be, you know, what is your go-to beef-related book, website, resource that you highly recommend someone utilizing?
For, you know, for producers and folks that are really working with this out in the field, I can't think of a better resource than the Beef Repro Task Force website.
Yeah.
You have all kinds of resources, recommended protocols. It's a very interesting and important group that does a very important job of, you know, reviewing what kind of data that we have on U.S. or synchronization protocols, so ensuring that those work before they recommend their use. So if you go to their website and see the protocols they recommend, know that those have been tested in several locations in different states and that those do work. So I think that that's a very good resource. And on top of that, they have several webinars and resources available, as well as, you know, your state extension. Those are usually not emphasized or not used as much as they should be used. So reach out to your extension agent. I think that the kind of extension work that is done here in the U.S. by land-grant universities is remarkable. And I think that it's a very important resource available.
Yes, both of those are great resources for producers. So what is a non-beef related book do you highly recommend someone reading?
Yeah, I gave this one some thought, and there's a couple of books from Dan Brown that I like to read, and I think that bring some interesting insights. So I'm going to talk about a couple of them that I think go hand to hand and might be interesting to, you know, the animal scientists and our audience. So there is a book from him that's called Inferno. And you know, the Dan Brown does a lot of Robert Langdon, I think, is the main character. And he's sort of a detective and, you know, knows a lot about art and history of art and everything. So it's a lot of puzzle solving during the book. But essentially in Inferno, the bad guys are trying to deal with the issue of overpopulation in a drastic way. I'm not going to say how they try to deal with that, not to spoil the book. But it essentially emphasizes on, you know, the population is growing so much that we're not going to be able to produce enough food for that population. So controlling the populational growth is something very important. This is something we can relate as animal scientists, right? Because we work hard trying to deal with that issue as well, right? And then there's another book from him called The Lost Symbol, where they emphasize how technology grows in a geometric progression. So whatever findings I find here might help your research to find something else. And then the wheel spins faster. So in one of the books, we're talking about the issue of superpopulation. In the other book, we're talking about how we can use the technology and develop new technology so that we can solve those kind of issues. They don't talk essentially about agriculture, but that's my understanding or where my mind went when reading those two books. So I think that those are very entertaining.
Great, great. And last question is, what sets apart a successful beef professional for someone that isn't?
Yeah, no, I think that a good professional is one that is a team player, right? We need to work as a team towards a common objective, a common goal. One that works hard and is interested in learning, right? I think that those are the qualities that I try to adopt myself and that have allowed me from coming, you know, from being a city boy from São Paulo to working in the beef industry. I watch some podcasts and everything, and I end up
right
with these tips for life kind of deal, I guess, that I heard elsewhere that I think are that I try to remind myself every so often that it's important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you were oftentimes when you're successful in life, people will say that you were lucky. And I understand that luck is when the opportunity meets the well-prepared person. So then try to be well-prepared so that whenever the opportunity shows up, you're able to take it and succeed well.
Yep.
And that the hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, right? So if you work hard, if you have a set goal in your mind and you're well prepared for whenever the opportunity shows up, you're going to be successful in your career for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so, well, I think that wraps us up. And so thanks for coming on the show, Dr. Giaz, and really insightful stuff on some ways to improve reproductive or conception rate by using AI and synchronization.
Well, my pleasure. Happy to be here and happy to chat with you and share the little bit that I know with your audience, Travis.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.